Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
A better application would be that we would be equally yoked with those whom we choose to marry. It would mean for those of you who aren't married, don't marry someone who is a non-believer. You will end up causing problems for yourself and difficulties. You will have a more difficult time serving and living for God.
We learn a lot about how to live our lives under Christ by don'ts in the Bible, just as much as do's. When it comes to looking for a life mate, God wants us to be spiritually unified and equally yoked, looking and praying for someone who loves Jesus and desires to serve Him just like you do. We're in Genesis chapters 34 and 35 with Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary Tucson. Please stay with us.
When God had told Jacob to leave Padan Aram, that's where he had acquired his two wives and his two concubines, and to this point, 11 sons and his flocks and his herds for working for his uncle Laban. And God told him to leave. God told him, leave Padan Aram and go to Israel, or go to the land of your family and go to your family. So he gave him a distinct destination, to his family. When Jacob left, he found himself with Laban behind him and Esau in front of him. And you remember last week we saw that Esau finally showed up, and when Esau got there, he fell on his neck and they cried together. And Esau said to Jacob, well, come on, I'll go with you. And Jacob said, nah, you don't need to do that. We're slow. We got a lot of young kids. We'll come along behind you. And Esau said, well, leave some guys behind. He said, nah, don't leave them behind. We'll be okay. And we'll meet you in Seir pretty soon. We'll come along behind you. So Esau left and went to Seir. Now, if you look at a map, the Seir that Esau was at, there's a couple of different Seirs. There's Mount Seir, which is in the middle of Israel. And then there's Seir. If you look on a map, the city of Seir is down by the Red Sea. It's all the way down south by Egypt. Today, where the border of Egypt is, there's a city in Israel called Eilat. That city is near Seir. So Esau was living way south. When Jacob started going now, he didn't go to Seir. He turned the exact opposite direction, and he went north of Israel. He could not have put any more distance between his brother and him if he tried, which I think he was trying. He went the exact opposite direction, and he did not go to where his father was. He didn't go to them. He immediately went to a city called Shechem. All right? And I think that Jacob is being Jacob again. You remember that he had been given a new name. You were no longer Jacob, but now you'll be called Israel. And Israel meant ruled by God. And now we're all excited to get to chapter 34 and see Jacob in his new life, now seeking God. And Jacob ends up running to an area of Shechem. And the shocking thing about chapter 34, it's a long chapter. We have 31 verses. It's kind of long. God is not mentioned once in chapter 34. God's mentioned 20 times, including the names that are mentioned in chapter 35. So there is a radical difference between Jacob in chapter 34 and Jacob in chapter 35. In chapter 34, Jacob is continuing to be Jacob. He is not Israel, ruled by God. He's continuing to try to handle his own life, his own circumstances. And so he runs to this city in Shechem, and there are people that have flocks and herds. The area, very green. So he settles in there thinking this will certainly be a good thing, and it is a nightmare for him. So we pick it up in verse 1. I don't know whether you guys are excited to study this chapter now or not after I intro it that way. So verse 1, now Dinah, the daughter of Leah. You remember that Jacob has one daughter we have been told about, Dinah, and Leah's daughter, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. So she just goes out to hang out with the other girls, probably her age. And when Shechem, the city of Shechem, we take it, is named after this Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her, and violated her. Verse 2 tells us that Shechem raped Dinah. Now, verse 3, his soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. What kind of love is it where you take what you want? But he has this attraction towards her. So Shechem spoke to his father, Hamor, saying, "Give me this young woman as a wife." And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now the sons were with the livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Jacob's response to the rape, and by the way, some say the seducing of his daughter, I think the way it's worded here in a couple of different places, it really is a rape and not a seduction. Jacob responds with nothing. Jacob doesn't do anything. Jacob finds himself in a place God did not tell him to go. He hasn't called out upon God. He isn't looking for the direction of God. In fact, he's done the opposite of what God wanted him to do, which was to go and be with his family, which we take it that he would have gone and sought out his father Isaac, who, by the way, is still alive. You remember that when Jacob left, his father thought he was dying. Well, he's still alive. He'll go to him in the next chapter, but he doesn't. And his daughter ends up getting raped, and Jacob doesn't have any kind of leadership. He simply is just quiet. I think, to be fair, it's a devastating moment for Jacob, like it would be for any of us. It's devastating. But where there is a lack of leadership, there is a vacuum, and someone will step in to lead. And those that step in to lead when the leaders won't lead oftentimes do not do things properly. And that's the case here. Verse 6, then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved and very angry. Now, you expect that. You don't see any of that with Jacob. Jacob is just quiet. He hears about it, doesn't do anything. But she has six brothers by Leah. These guys come in, and they're older now, by the way, and they are angry. And it says, because he had done this disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, the thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to me as a wife." Nothing speaking about the rape at all. "And make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourselves in it." Shechem said to her father and her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, that I will give." So Shechem says, and his father, "You guys marry with us and we'll marry with you and we'll kind of become one people and it'll all be good. But you remember that God did not want them intermarrying with the Canaanites. And it had nothing to do with race, as some have tried to point out and say that God did not want interracial marriages. I want you to remember that Moses married a Moabite woman. So that was an interracial marriage. It wasn't the interracial marriage that was a problem. It was that one was godly and one was not. God did not want them intermarrying with the Canaanites because the Canaanites did not serve the one true living God. A better application would be that we would be equally yoked with those whom we choose to marry. It would mean for those of you who aren't married, don't marry someone who is a non-believer. You will end up causing problems for yourself and difficulties. You will have a more difficult time serving and living for God. You don't see things the same way. God did not want them marrying for that reason. They want to do that. They want to marry with them. And this would, of course, taint the line of the Messiah, because it is through Jacob that the Messiah is going to be born. And so in verse 12, "Ask me ever so much dowry and gift." This is Shechem saying to them, "Ask me whatever you want, and I will give you according to what you say to me. But give me the young woman as a wife." But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. So they had an ulterior motive all along. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, we will consent to you, if you will become as we are, and every male of you is circumcised." Now, really, if they were trying to really not be deceitful with them, they would say, "You guys need to stop serving your false gods and serve the true one living God." That's really what they needed to do. But they make circumcision the issue for obvious reasons. Well, they become obvious here shortly. "Then we will give our daughters to you, and you will take our daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed our voice and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the younger man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all of the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore, let us dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives." By the way, as far as we know, Jacob only had one daughter. So their argument that let's take their daughters as wives was kind of for Shechem, and that was it. "And let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised." So you guys got to be circumcised. I don't think they're very happy about that. However, verse 23, "Will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent with them, and they will dwell with us." So the bottom line is money. The bottom line is he persuades them not by the women that are available, because there's not any, but the bottom line is the money. Everything. Jacob had a large company that was with him, all kinds of different flocks, and they wanted that. "And all who went out of the gate of the city heeded Hamor and Shechem, his son. Every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of his sons of Jacob, Simon and Levi, Dinah's brothers," okay, there's Reuben, the oldest, and then Simon and Levi, and then Judah is the fourth. So these are the two older brothers, but not Reuben, not the very oldest. "Simon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males." This is nothing less than murder. They murder the men of this city. Jacob carries some of the blame because of the vacuum of leadership that he had. He didn't seek God on how he should handle it. He just found himself in this incredibly hurtful situation. Listen, what do we do when things turn really ugly in our lives? What do we do when we find ourselves in situations we never thought we would be in? Do we just kind of bow our heads and say nothing? That's when it's the time to seek the Lord. That's when it's time to say, "God, what do you want? What can I do? And how can I move and move on behalf and do something here?" God is able to take ugly situations and even bring beauty out of them. But here, they just murder this town. And they kill Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys that was in the city, that was in the field, and all of their wealth, the little ones and their wives, and they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in their houses. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land." I find it interesting that Jacob doesn't say, "What have you done?" You can't just murder people. You can't just march on a town and plunder it and murder people. You can't do such a thing. Instead, he says, "What have you done to me?" They are self-consumed at this point. And he says, "I'm going to be made obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I. But they said, should he treat our sister like a harlot? And with that, I think they silenced Jacob. What had Jacob done? What kind of leadership? I don't even know, as I read and study this chapter, I don't even know that I know what Jacob should have done. But I'm sure he shouldn't have just have been quiet. He should have done something. He should have had leadership. Jacob and his family head off up into an area in Shechem where they haven't been called by God to go. No doubt it was pleasing to the eyes. There was a lot of fields. They had large flocks. They settle in this area for how long? It's a detour. And during this time, Simeon and Levi. Now, he doesn't do anything with Simeon and Levi either. Again, it's a vacuum of leadership with Jacob. Jacob doesn't do anything when his daughter's raped. And then his sons murder these men in the village. And he just says, what have you done? You've made me obnoxious. And they go, should I treat her sister like a harlot? And then he moves on. Doesn't do anything with them. Now, when he is at the blessing, when he blesses his sons, he deals with them then. He says, because you guys did this, you shall be scattered throughout all of Israel. So there are consequences from what they have done. It's interesting that Simeon is scattered and assimilated into Judah. And Levi is assimilated into all of Israel by becoming the priests. Isn't that interesting how God takes what is this awful thing that Levi did, and then when Jacob pronounces his judgment, finally when he's dying, you guys shall be scattered throughout all of Israel. They're then scattered throughout all of Israel as a blessing. God is even able to take those curses and turn them around into blessings. We really do serve an amazing God. And the next verse is even more amazing. That's verse 1 of chapter 35, because things radically change in this chapter, where God's not mentioned at all in the chapter above it. And you got to ask yourself before we get into 35, how are we living our lives? Are we living our lives like 34, where we're just kind of going, looking, seeing what's best, trying to deal with the situations and circumstances? Or like chapter 35, then God. Now, we don't even get to the first two words. And you find God all of a sudden. Not mentioned at all in 34, but then God said to Jacob, arise and go to Bethel. Get up and get to the house of God. Arise and go to Bethel and dwell there and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. And Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. Now we learn something about them. Not only had they gone to this place of Shechem because it was good for them financially, they didn't seek God while they were there. These horrible things happened to them. But we also learn now that they have been serving false gods while they're there. That's what happens. Whenever there's a vacuum, something will fill that vacuum. And if you are not serving God and living for Him, wholeheartedly giving everything to Him, something else will come in. You will begin to live for something else. In the great words of Bob Dylan, you're going to have to serve somebody. It might be the devil or it might be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. And so while they're up there, they're serving these false gods. And now Jacob takes leadership. Put these things away, purify yourselves and change your garments. Then let us arise and go to Bethel. The name Bethel means the house of God. And I will make an altar there to God. So now Jacob is seeking God, where he didn't seek Him at all before. Now he's going to Bethel to seek Him, who answered me in the day of my distress, and He has been with me in the way that I have gone. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hands and their earrings which were in their ears. And I imagine that they were connected to the idolatry. There's other places earrings are mentioned, by the way. These specifically were connected to idolatry. And Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree, which was by Shechem. And I'm sure a lot of people have searched the terebinth trees around Shechem, looking for the idols and the earrings. And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz. You remember that Jacob named Luz Bethel years earlier. That is Bethel, it says, which is in the land of Canaan. and all of the people who were with him. And he built an altar there and called the place El Beth-El, God of the house of God, quite literally, because there God appeared to him when he fled from the face of his brother. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried below Bethel under the terebinth tree. So the name of it was called Elon Bakoth, or the weeping tree, quite literally. So I don't know if Deborah was with Jacob at this point or if they were somewhere else. I imagine that Deborah had started to travel with him after his mother had died, and so she's now with him there. And then God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him. Now, I love verse 9. It's an interesting verse to me because God says that God appears to him and blesses him when he came from Paddan Aram to Bethel. And it's like God takes the whole Shechem incident and doesn't even mention it. Talks about from Paddan Aram to Bethel, and now he's going to bless Jacob. And this whole chapter, chapter 34, I think you're probably like me in that it leaves kind of a bad taste in my mouth. I don't like it when I read it because I want the people of the Bible, I want Jacob to be awesome. I want Simeon and Levi to be heroes. I don't want them to be butchers that murdered a city. And yet, we see the mercy of God, that God begins to work on behalf of Jacob now, and all of us understand that we need God's mercy. There might only be one or two people in this room who think that you don't need God's mercy and you're the one that's in the worst trouble. We all need God's mercy. And that God would once again turn to Jacob, and that God would use his family, that they would become the 12 tribes of Israel, that Levi would become the tribes of the priests, speaks of God using us. And especially tonight, if you have walked away from God, if you have turned away, and that's what happens. A lot of times it's not a decision. You don't wake up one day and decide, you know what? I'm backsliding. I'm going to go live like God doesn't exist. It just happens. You drift away from God. And the next thing you know, you're not calling out to him when you're making decisions. You're not looking for his direction. You're not trying to live within the word of God. Maybe that's where you are today. Maybe in essence, you're at Shechem. And you say, well, what do I do now? Well, you go to Bethel. You build an altar. You get rid of the foreign gods. You seek God. You call out upon his name. And I use those as analogies, right? I don't mean literally, right? I mean, you begin to call out upon God, and then God will meet you there. And God is so full of mercy that he just says, Jacob again, and he came from Paddan Aram, and God blessed him. Then verse 10, and God said to him, your name is Jacob. You shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. So it's like God wrestles with him. He says, bless me. And he says, what's your name? And he says, it's Jacob, supplanter. All right, well, you are now going to be called ruled by God from here on out. So Jacob leaves, goes to Shechem, has the whole Shechem incident take place. And then he comes back to Bethel, seeks God, has them cleanse themselves and put on new garments, builds an altar there to him. And God says, okay, starting now, instead of starting here, you'll be called Israel, but starting now, you'll be called Israel. Our God is the God of fresh starts. Our God is the God of new beginnings.
We hope you've been blessed and encouraged here at Practical Christian Living Radio to live out God's Word and to love like Jesus as you do. If you'd like to hear more of Robert Furrow's teachings, visit calvarytucson.com, where you'll find recordings of weekly services at Calvary Tucson and also archives of Practical Christian Living programs. For our local radio listeners, Calvary Tucson is open and holding physical services while being mindful and considerate of social distancing guidelines. We also have new service times. Our East Campus now meets Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 9:45 a.m. Our West Campus meets Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. Our midweek service times will remain the same, Wednesday, 6 p.m. at East Campus, 7:15 p.m. at our West Campus. If you have concerns about your health or you're in a high-risk category, please attend our online campus. You can watch at live.calvarytucson.com and also on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Our online campus is available during East Campus service times. For a complete list of social distancing policies and updates on when other ministries within our church will reopen, please visit calvarytucson.com. If Practical Christian Living Radio has blessed you and you would like to donate and help support this ministry, please visit pclaz.org. That's pclaz.org, where you can make a secure one-time donation or sign on to become a monthly partner on a reoccurring basis. Have you accepted Jesus into your life, or do you have questions about salvation? Please email us at saved@calvarytucson.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media, Instagram at Calvary Tucson or Facebook at Calvary Chapel Tucson. And we want to remind our local listeners that you can watch Practical Christian Living Sunday mornings at 8:30 on KGUN 9. May you walk in the grace and peace of Jesus today.